Sci-Fi Party Line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and today I have with me Carl.
What's happening, Kat?
Nothing. We have some special guests.
It's a full house tonight.
Yeah, it is. We have Daryl from No Apologies Podcast, and what are the, like, 10 other podcasts you're on?
Only four more.
Okay, come on. What are we on? Like, No Apologies?
Nothing's on.
Nothing's on.
Comic Book Roadshow.
Right.
And Yeah, I Said It. And DC Noise. And The Pictures Hideout.
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive.
And we have Eric back. Whee!
Wow, I'm a special guest now. Awesome.
And Eric hosts Mostly Harmless Cutaway. And you have some new podcasts, too.
Yeah, there's the offshoot Prognosis Negative, where we just talk about movies in general, kind of just for anyone who's a movie buff. But since a lot of my friends who come on with me all have their own Doctor Who podcasts, there's a little shading of Doctor Who in everything, whatever it is we're watching, whether it's a Hitchcock movie or Scorsese. Somehow we paint with a little Doctor Who brush, just a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
But it's good fun, and also on that same feed, we've been doing commentaries of, like, every James Bond movie leading up to Skyfall, and just have a lot of fun over there.
All right, guys. Those links will be in the show notes, and you can check those guys out. Today, though, we're going to talk about John Carter.
Yay.
Yay.
Yeah.
Woo.
Get the word out.
Yeah. Right? Because no one's seen it. Oh. This is a Disney film scored by Mike G., of Lost,
yeah.
Alcatraz, and Star Trek.
He's so the man.
Yeah. John Favreau. How do you say that?
Favreau.
Okay. Iron Man. He's the director.
Whoa. No, he's not. He was the director at one. This movie has a... I mean, if we want to go into its origins of a movie.
I was just reading Wikipedia.
No. He was the director previously at the helm. And Robert Rodriguez was the director before him. But
wow.
Neither of them was the current or... last director.
Oh, God.
Which is why I was good.
Oh.
The actual director is Andrew Stanton, who...
Oh, yes, right. That's right. I read that. Okay.
Who, you know, he's known for Pixar movies, namely Bug's Life, Finding Nemo, and WALL-E.
Okay. Well, principal photography was in London, then Utah. This movie cost was that million or billion? Million.
Better be million.
Million. Sorry.
Not billion. It's not. It didn't cost half of
Apple. Sorry, I was. There's fear involved here. 250 million. It only made 30 million U.S. the first weekend out, but 1.4 billion in Italy, or 1 billion euro.
So it's messing up the B's and the M's.
No, I think it was a billion, or was it?
No, that's Avatar country.
Yeah, we got to clear this up a little bit here.
Sorry.
It made 108 million, actually.
And that's worldwide, like, so far.
Yeah.
So also, John Carter, this story with the release of this movie is 100 years old. So came out in 1912.
Wow.
Those are the kind of butchered facts that I gave you about the film. I'm gonna start first with, I didn't know what to expect. I only saw it in 3D because they had, like, only two showings for regular D, and then 3D they had, like, a bunch of them, so I was like, screw it, I have to do 3D. The 3D was weird at times and in places, because I don't know, kind of pointed out some of the scaling issues where something real small was something had a big, massive, I guess, landscape or whatever. And it was like, I don't know. It was just really weird with the scaling with the 3D. So I don't know if they should have did that, because the people look really 3D and then the background then looked just flat. Mm-hmm. And it looked just bizarre in some places. I don't think they needed 3D for this film
at all. No, definitely not.
So that they did not need that. And it was just a little too much because they didn't even make it for it. Other than that, I fell in love with John Carter. I thought he was a very great actor, unlike Prince of Persia, which I thought this was going to be like. This was better than Prince of Persia.
Wait, God.
Yeah.
Let's not bring that up.
Yeah. I think it's Carl or Daryl came up with I'm Still Your Thunder here on how this is how cowboys and aliens should have been.
That was Daryl.
Okay.
Well, that's interesting, though. That's almost like reverse engineering, because after I found out that Favreau was he was working on this film for a long time, John Carter, before he had to leave and move on to Iron Man, and then later Cowboys and Aliens, I was thinking, you know, I'm sure a lot of his Cowboys and Aliens idea was influenced somewhat by all the time he spent working on this project. Like, I really wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, he took all the parts that sucked and put it into Cowboys and Aliens, because I don't know, I was just sitting there, and when you said this is how Cowboys and Aliens should have been, that's just spot on, because there was the emotion there. Even, you know, it was cheesy, a little, you know, hammy or whatever, but it was there, and I liked it, and it was standard, you know, stuff that we've seen before, but, I mean, it's 100 years old, so maybe people were borrowing from that. So, I don't know, I really liked it. I don't understand why it's a, quote, flop, money-wise. A lot of people are not liking it for some reason, and which of you gentlemen want to start first?
Well, I would disagree.
Okay.
With that it being a flop. The bad thing about...
Money flop is what I meant.
Well, even with that, studios are doing a lazy thing where they just throw a whole bunch of money at a marketing firm, and then they, you know, pretty much push the film in the same places all the time. They spent half of the $250 million was done was marketing.
Half?
Almost half of their budget went to marketing this film.
That is extremely hard to believe.
Wow, because
yes,
because I mean, when I think about, you know, Lucasfilm stuff, when I think about some of the other movies, I saw John Carter out, but I didn't see it like that out. You know, in terms of ads and posters and the cross marketing that you see, I didn't see it that much.
They got
I didn't
robbed.
See it that much. Yeah, I don't know.
A lot of these movies, look up a lot of these movies and read into the articles on them. You'd be surprised at how much money they spend on advertising, which is hurting the film because they don't make any money back. If you spend, you know, most of your money after special effects is spent on trying to promote the film.
But $100 million?
And you get nothing back. Exactly.
Well, some of that was probably Super Bowl.
Yeah. You have these firms that, you know, but it's a lazy way of doing it. They've been doing it the same way for years where they, you know, put it in McDonald's or Burger King and, you know, TV and commercials are getting more expensive every year. So this stuff is getting to the point now where it's so overpriced that it's not even worth trying to promote it when you don't make half the money back.
Well, did you like it, Daryl?
I loved it. Like, this movie, I've never read the novels, never read any comics on it. All I knew is this guy is from Earth. He gets transported to Mars, and that's it. That's all I know. And he hopped. He can hop real high. That's all I knew. But it just looked like it was fun. So I just went, saw it, and it reminded me when I was a kid. Those you know, old sci-fi, you know, movies that used to be on, or those black and white serials, or the, you know, those 80s low-budget action films that we let slide because it's just fun.
Oh, it's a classic. That's, I can see some kids saying, like, when 20 years from now, oh, that John Carter, I love that film.
Because that's what it, I mean, it celebrated that all that. I mean, you know, the aliens were fun, the dog with the super speed, the super, you know, the dog with super speed and him and the, you know, meeting the other aliens and the way that they try to communicate with him at first. And
Virginia.
Yeah, Virginia. I mean, those little things. I mean, it just, I just sat back and I was not looking at my watch Black Cowboys. Cowboys and Indians.
Ooh, and aliens. Aliens, man, geez.
Oh, that's right, because they did have aliens, right?
Oh, dear.
My bad.
Yeah, let's not.
No. Yeah, but.
Who's next? Who wants to go next? Get in there and.
I'm going to let Eric go. Go, Eric.
Eric. Oh.
No, I mean, obviously, I enjoyed the movie a lot. I don't know. I've thought about it a lot now. Knowing, you know, that it's based on this existing franchise from 100 years ago that, by the way, I never heard of. Never heard of until they started marketing this movie several months ago. Never heard of John Carter or the novels or anything. And now that I've seen it and now that I know what the story entails, I feel like the way I feel about it now is if the way a person may feel if they just discovered, like, The Wizard of Oz for the first time now. Like, the movie or the book or Alice in Wonderland or Peter Pan. And you're like, this has been around all this time? Like, how did I not know about this? Like, how did no one tell me? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me because it seems that good to me. And especially because back in the day when I was in middle school and high school, this type of book, that's all I read back in those days. Mm-hmm. I was all about H.G. Wells and Jules Verne and all their stuff, and I just ate all that stuff up. How did this go under my radar? I have no idea. And it boggles my mind. But that being said, I really liked it. I know it reminds me of another movie, but depending on who you are in sci-fi, this movie, I don't know why it gets a lot of flack. It reminds me of the first time I saw the original Stargate movie at the movies.
I thought that too.
Because I know there's a lot of like haters now, like years later on the film. But I always thought the film was pretty cool when it was new.
Yeah.
And what I liked about it was that, like with Stargate, I had no idea what this was going to be about and where it was going to go. And as I was in the theater seeing it the first time, as everything unfolds, you just don't know. Like, you know, are they going to, oh, are there more aliens? Are there humans? Or are they aliens? And there's, you know, this, you know, where's it going? You know, what are we trying to do here? And I'm like interested and I'm engaged like the whole time, like wondering. And because it has that, because it's based on classic material, you don't really know because it's not the sci-fi that you're used to. It's not the typical movie sci-fi that somehow takes a page from Star Wars or 2001 or Alien, which is what most random sci-fi movies are. Like, mm-hmm. There's like big spaceships and, you know, computers and but there's none of that, of course, in this movie. So you don't know what to expect. You don't know where it's gonna go. You don't know the rules. Like, is there magic or, you know, how does technology work? We don't really know because it's such an undiscovered country because it's not like what we're used to. It's like exciting and fresh because, you know, we've seen movies that had to do with Mars. Nothing like this, though, you know.
So true.
But so, I mean, I enjoyed it. And it held, there was different elements throughout that different kind of things that appealed to me. And it was just solid.
Awesome. Another film, Eric, that it reminded me of was Phantom Menace for some reason. Oh. I'm not sure why, but it's like this is what I wanted Phantom Menace to kind of be like.
Clutch the pearl.
Without the Jar Jar, because you got the
weird that's
aliens.
Who Jar Jar should have been.
That's what I'm saying. Reasonable if Jar Jar scary. And his little crew of people were like these aliens, uh-huh. I think Phantom Menace would have been a lot more enjoyable.
Oh, cut out the Fade Federation.
Okay, fine. I shouldn't have brought it up. But
I'm just saying that ain't the only thing that made.
No,
it
I know what you're saying though. I totally get what you're saying, because I was thinking about the prequels a little bit. Just in that, because of the effects.
Yeah.
And how far they've come in the last 10 and a little bit years, because as cutting edge as the prequel effects were at the time, when I look at them now, they really date the prequels for me. And a lot of the CG is really jarring, especially in the first two prequels with the landscapes and everything being. But in this movie, obviously, we've worked it out now. Technologically speaking,
not in 3D.
To where it doesn't. Well, yeah, I'm not going to talk about 3D.
Not in 3D because it was so weird. You should see
in
3D.
In 2D. In 2D, they worked it out now where it's so seamless. Like, they do this stuff like nothing now, like with the CG creatures and the landscapes, that you don't even focus it on anymore because it's all worked out and it looks good. So you're not even thinking about it anymore, you know, and it's just, yeah. But I did think about the prequels, certainly, because there's a lot of common, you know, Tatooine scenery, obviously, throughout.
Right. So, Carl.
Well, yes, I did like this movie. I liked it a lot, and I'm agreeing with Eric here in terms of, you know, not quite knowing what to expect. I also kind of grew up on the old sci-fi literature, like, you know, reading the H.G. Wells stuff, reading, and not all old, you know, some of it was Bradbury and whatnot, but there was a look to the science fiction that was only on the cover of the books, yeah. You know, so obviously you got to use your imagination when you're reading those books. Most of the stuff that old sci-fi, they haven't really, with the exception of War of the Worlds, and we saw how that went, but you know, they haven't really tried to make again in a modern way. But there was just a feel where if you looked at the old book covers, the way that the hero, and of course there's a princess and some crazy alien peeking in off the back page, you know, just the way all of that looked, they managed to capture in this movie. And to say that the movie was beautiful, I mean, in terms of how it looked, the effects and the way that the scenes were made. I love the stained glass tech of the aliens,
oh,
you know, and
my God,
it,
those
just
ships
everything.
Were great.
Oh, and the, you know, never mind how hot the princess was. Ugh. Did you check out her jewelry? I mean, she was just bling her outfits and just like every little
piece. I
look
at her jewelry all the time.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, let's just calm it down, folks.
But I mean, so just, you know, getting when you see a movie like this, you recognize how hackneyed and tired the other sci-fi that we have seen. No, I'm serious. So I'm pointing out, independent of story, independent of the storyline or the action or any of that other stuff, just the way this movie looked, it was really, really pretty. And it, that by itself was almost enough to carry it through this film. But okay, so letting that go, the fact that it was based on classic sci-fi, and I have an affinity for that, was really strong. I was really enjoying the connection from the previous era. But the thing that I think was a good thing about this movie, but maybe one of the reasons why it didn't do so well, the good side of it is, the way that the story rolled out was very slow, and I was enjoying getting to know the characters. I was enjoying how one scene led into the next. It wasn't, you know, big explosive bay with flashes and whirls and stuff. It was very subtle and liquid, you know, one right into the next. You know, and they were playful, you know, we heard that you're a rebel, and then boom, and then he's out of the window. They threw him, you know, they locked him down. And,
oh, yeah.
All right, sir, we found out that you've got a sort of a wild streak. Boom, and then he's out the window, and he's rolling. Then he put him in jail. You know, just the little silliness of that. Yeah. You know, that didn't require big special effects. That wasn't, you know, crazy. It was, you got to know something about him as a character. It was genuinely entertaining just watching them two, you know, cutting up and having that issue. But the problem is, with all of this liquid story, with all of this, you know, relatively slow unveiling and flow of it, I found the action almost unnecessary in this movie. And now think about it. Now, that's not something I say too often, but with this story, think about it. Now, every time there was an action sequence in this film, it felt totally jarring and not necessarily in place. It felt like it was pulled from another movie. Just the action sequences.
Only the one where they did the big Thunderdome Braveheart scene at the end with the two little monsters from Hoth
going at the one.
Okay, sorry.
Everyone, and here's my defense. Here's my defense. Here's my on one side of it. It is clear that a lot of different modern sci-fi was inspired by John Carter. And so by that, you can let him slide where man that looked like the pod race, man that looked like the arena scene, you know, from you know, episode 2. Yeah, man, you know, that stuff was really all these pieces of the thing. Absolutely Braveheart. Shoot, when he jumped out of that thing and he was half blue, that's like Avatar.
Like, I mean, it was just, and then he raised this thing. Yeah. Yeah, it was just weird.
But the thing is, look at the action sequences, though. Look at what was going on in the action scenes in this movie. They were so absolutely unnecessary.
Well, hang on now.
The cycle chase, or you know, whatever the glass cycle chase. They had that beautiful walking city, which I was dying to see. I was dying to see some kind of like crazy giant battle between the walking city and the still city. The only thing we saw of the walking city was him dodging through the feet of it, and then you know, crashing the glass glider. That was it. You know, it was there to really, wow, look, we can show you the effects. It's exciting. He's getting away. And that was it. Look at the scene where they finally confront Scar or whatever the guy's name is, you know, with the half hook, you know, coming out of his head. Where, you know, the whole movie, they set him up to be the bad guy. They pin, you know, all the guys down in the episode two arena. At last, I challenge you, sir, to a duel! Rawr! And everybody's jumping up. He couldn't even get out the seat. It was like, all right, we're gonna break. Chunk! He was dead. I mean, it was his head rolled out. That was it. You got a hold of Rita. It was like, dude, I'm in charge again. See ya. And it was next scene. So each time that they tried to make these, you know, these big action things, it was like, well, that was great. But can I get back to the running dog? I really want to see more of that. You know, it was just like. It didn't seem it even at the end. I mean, of course, it was the mandatory, you know, crescendo battle between the good guys and bad guys, and everybody's, you know, crashing and smashing things. But those sequences, I enjoyed the storytelling and the characters and all of the other elements of the movie so much more. And all of that seemed to fit well together. The action always seemed jarring and not like it was part of the rest of the film. That's just my take on it.
One little tidbit for you, Carl. Mm-hmm. You know the evil nun from Caprica?
Yes.
She was in this movie as Sarkoja.
Yeah. Wait, who's Sarkoja?
I forget. She was one of the aliens.
Oh. Maybe
she was the mean alien lady. Of course, she was the mean one. Yeah.
She was like the sister. She acted like she was
the bad nun. Yeah.
Can I get away from Caprica, please?
Oh, it's everywhere.
Don't you know?
It's in your wheel. Well, okay. So the only thing that I have nitpicked was that I think the wedding was too fast of her and John Carter. Cause like, she was just getting married to this one guy, but she like, you know, what did they know each other for like a week or something?
She was vulnerable. I'm just saying.
It was true love.
But the dad agreed in it, and they, like, you know, gripped the weird wraparound cup thing to drink out of.
Oh, the chalice was the bomb.
That was not the bomb. That was so complicated. Just get a cup.
No, I love the chalice.
It was elegant.
It was tacky. It was a little kitsch.
Water is such an important resource and scarce.
What would be the best way to signify love would be...
The sharing of something so precious.
I totally agree.
Oh, I hate you all.
I really thought you'd appreciate it. It was beautiful.
Exactly.
It was not beautiful. It was tacky.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Anyway, I just thought the wedding was too fast. I thought the cup was complicated for no reason because you got to do the thing.
But this is a different world. I mean, he saved her. I mean, he pretty much saved her kingdom. I mean, that's...
Let's get married right now. Let me give you my dead wife's ring. It was weird.
Well, look, you know, he had a while to get over that.
He had the dead wife who got burned in the village.
But that was a while.
And literally a whole other world away. He was over that years ago.
Come on. You could give her a new ring. You don't have to give her the old dead wife's ring.
Where was he going to go? The jewelry factory? He's on Mars.
Man, you guys have no soul.
But your wife get burned to death.
Let the pretty princess with shiny jewels. Let me give her my old wife ring.
Wait, hold up. This is the same woman that defended Laura.
Oh, come on now.
We got to go.
Whatever you're going to say doesn't have anything to do with this conversation.
Yes, it does.
So leave it alone.
I'm dying to hear. Let's hear it.
Don't enable him. We're talking about John Carter of Earth. What did I say?
Come on.
Here we go. You're going to go Walking Dead, aren't you?
That it was okay for Laurie. It wasn't a bad thing that Laurie started sleeping with.
She didn't give Shane Rick's ring.
Oh, she gave him something.
She gave him something so precious.
Shoot.
She gave him the other ring.
Mm. A lot of times, too.
Yeah, much rather my woman girl. Give a dude a ring than, you know, that's crazy woman. Okay. You're talking crazy.
Come on, Dad. He married her. He put a ring on it before he slept, before she slept with
him. And she was on the same planet as him. That's crazy.
Exactly. Come on now, Kat. Come on. You got to admit.
I really think that if you meet an alien princess on another planet, your wife ought to give you a break. They ought to give you a break on that one. Yeah.
And she had died previously. He's been on sabbatical acting crazy.
That's true.
Who knows how long, you know, mourning the death of his wife and child.
Yeah.
I mean, how long is he supposed to, you know?
He literally let go of the whole planet.
I don't care that he got married to her. It was a little fast for my taste, and he should have gave her another ring.
But that ring signified what the last bit of... That was the only thing that he treasured from that world. Besides, that ring was it. There was nothing
else. Okay, I see that. So the thing that he treasured from that world, he gave to her because...
He shared with her, yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll go for that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess his wife won't haunt him.
If it was Lord, you're all right, right?
Whatever.
Haunt him. That's great.
That is.
Wow.
Whatever. But I don't know. I know Ryan. I've had him on here a long time ago. He said he hated this film, so I should have had somebody on here who hated it. Hi, Ryan. Tell me why you hate it, because I don't know why.
he's shaking the iPod right now.
You guys. It's so...
I mean, it was just, it's better than a lot of stuff out there. I thought it was just like Eric said about the unfolding. I didn't know what was going to go on. I think Lori may have mentioned John Carter of Mars to me. I remember somebody saying the title of this name to me. And so it was in my head, but I didn't know what it was.
It might have been because she reads a lot of sci-fi novels.
Right. So I think she may have like put the seed in my head. So when it came out, I was like, okay, I'm going to see this. And then I was kind of confused why I didn't have the Mars name. Mm-hmm. And so they was like, well, we didn't do the Mars name because he didn't become John Carter of Mars until the end of the movie. But, you know, movies going forward would have Mars name and blah, blah, blah. Because we didn't want to turn people off putting Mars in the name, blah, blah, blah.
So, well, I know it's like Tarzan and all this other stuff, but this was before Tarzan. I mean, this was the story.
And it was the same dude.
Yeah, the same guy. So this story, I mean, it's just, it hasn't been made. All those other stories have been made. So people automatically, you know, say they don't like the film because it's the story we've seen the story before. But
it's a classic hero's tale. I mean, yeah. You know, it's the hero, it's to save the princess, it's the mustache twisting guy. You know, it's
Mark Strong.
It was swashbuckling on
the reverse of Superman.
Yeah.
It was the reverse of Superman. Instead of, you know, the alien coming to Earth and had being stronger, he went to Mars and he wound up being like a Superman type character there on that planet.
That's weird, yeah.
It was fun. They used the aliens a lot.
I know. Yeah. I didn't expect them to be so prevalent in the film. I just didn't think.
And their little culture was interesting. You know,
they were Klingons, really.
Well, yeah, but with hatcheries and stuff.
Oh, God.
You know, it did slap me in the face. You know what? Now that you come to think about it, with Phantom Menace, it did. There is something that did remind me of that. With the same way that I think Lucas was trying to do in Phantom Menace, but he just did it in a way that was kind of sloppy. With showing the what was her name?
Padme? Queen Adala?
No, not Queen Adala. And the and those terrible
Gungans?
The Gungans, yeah. See how I flashed that out of my head?
But
trying to show that those two cultures are on this planet and they were kind of treated unfairly.
Mm-hmm. Maybe what did it. Reminded me of the episode.
Please, if that's the only thing.
I'm just saying, it was just like, I was like, well, this is how I wanted Phantom Menace to feel. I mean, you know, I tolerated it because Liam Neeson, blah, blah, we won't do that today, but I don't know. I just really like this, and I just can't. Somebody actually called this film derivative, and wow, it was just, I don't understand the not feeling of this film for people. Like, what was so bad about it?
Because it was big budget.
It's not that it was big budget, because I really think it's the action thing. I mean, not just my
people
view.
People was turned off by action, please.
Let me finish. Okay. What I'm saying, not my view, which I believe is the action seemed unnecessary and didn't seem to fit in the story. There wasn't enough of it in this film. They really did pay attention to. Oh yeah, they really did pay attention to characters. You know, the story was slower paced than a lot of modern
big budget. I didn't feel the slow thing that you're talking
me
about.
Either.
Well, that's because it's a good story. But you have to contrast that with a lot of modern sci-fi. Look at what, instead of the story that we got in John Carter, which, because we are fans of story and character, did not seem slow to us. But compare that with what a lot of big budget sci-fi is about now, with the explosions, with the complete lack of character development. You put those two things together, and if you've been raised only on that kind of big budget sci-fi, and then you walk into this expecting to see, you know, giant robots or, you know, that kind of, you're going to be a little put off. Because
but I think though, Carl, that people just didn't give it a chance, because if you see John Carter and then you see the princess, those are two people that everybody can fall in love with. And that's what you're looking for when you go into the movie. You're looking to fall in love with the characters. You're looking to really, you know, identify with them. And you, like you said earlier, to the story and stuff. Not everybody, but what I'm just saying that, like, I mean, I think girls would even like this story.
Well, that, especially because of that. I mean, there's sort of a different sort of attention to certain details. The reason I think that, you know, more women don't enjoy classical sci-fi or more sci-fi movies is because it's typically less character-driven. Now, the best of it is, we're not going to get into that, but really, per moment, the special effects, it's the explosions, it's the details, it's the other worlds, it's the technology, it's the alternate realities. And then if it's good, they can wheedle in some good character development and that kind of stuff. That is, you know, the hallmark of really good modern sci-fi. But the average sci-fi that comes out, and why a lot of women I know don't like it, is because they don't pay attention to the character development. They throw a lot of explosions and things up on the screen. And if you're used to that, I'm telling you, John Carter, compared to, I mean, look at how long this movie is. Because we were appreciating, I mean, look how long it takes for him to get to Mars. I mean, these things, people are not, you know, we're not quite ready for that kind of pacing when they hear a $200 million movie has hit the theater. They're expecting something different. And
well,
I think
they
that's
peppered it, right? I think they peppered the action well enough in the movie, in throughout the movie, that you kind of kept my interest. Like
the fact that it is pepper, I'm not arguing that it wasn't well done. I'm saying compared to what a lot of the modern sci-fi movies out now are like, people, you know, they've gotten accustomed to the big explosion stuff happening every second, the one-liners, the clickbait. You know,
how would they know that this movie is not that if they didn't go to see it at all in the first place? People didn't give this a chance.
Because I've heard a lot of the complaints I've heard from people who said to me, I hate that movie, were people that only saw a 2-second trailer.
And it had
Disney on it, and they were like, I don't like it. It represents everything that I hate.
It represents
it's big budget. They jump it, they throw it in there with
big budget films make a lot. Transformers is crap by comparison. Yes, I said that. And
big budget doesn't mean.
I'm just saying crap in comparison. I don't know what I'm just saying. It is big budget, and people go to see that, and that makes a lot of money. So I don't understand why people just
It's not that it was big budget. Big budget doesn't immediately prejudice people. Big budget gives people an expectation of something. So people not going to say, I'm not going to that movie because it's a big budget movie. That's not happening. People have an expectation of a big budget movie, and then they go there and they are maybe disappointed. But here's the other thing. But if you look at the previews, the commercials that came out for John Carter, they did something very awkward and odd. Now, another big, you know, big beef I have about commercials and ads, you know, I know Kat, she doesn't care whether the commercial has anything to do with the movie. She thinks that you can run an ad for, you know, like, I don't know, the Lady and the Tramp, and it'd be episode one, and because it's a corporation, that's okay. I have a crazy belief that the preview ought to have something to do with what the movie is about, but this is what I mean. When you watch the very first preview for John Carter, which, oh man, it was beautiful. It was the slow one that had Peter Gabriel's song. Well, it was his remake. He was singing My Body's a Cage, which, by the way, if you understand the transporter technology, is really poignant in the film. But it had an almost Dune kind of feel where, you know, it was slow and the panoramas were important and they did, you know, zoomed in on people's faces. And it was very restful and slow. And it was actually more consistent with what the film was like. So when I saw that preview, I was very excited about John Carter. The reviews for that preview came in. People were complaining that they didn't know what the movie was about and that it didn't look like it was exciting. And then they recut the Phantom Menace version of it where they got rid of the slow pacing. And it was literally every scene that we had seen from Phantom Menace, you know, the crowd, yay! And then this odd scene. And I'm sitting there going, well, dang, I like the first one. Now I'm not sure if I want to see the movie. Transition between those two previews told everybody out there, we don't know what we're doing with this film, and you don't know what to expect when you come in here. Good luck. And when you do stuff like, and then a third preview came out, and that really looked more like Avatar, but it was still bigger and more explosive and a lot more action. It was not the thoughtful first one that came out. And so all this jarring, you know, again, expectations. People are like, well, look, they spent $200 million on this, and they can't even get the commercial right, and it looks like every other sci-fi movie I have seen. I'm not going to this. Forget it. I'm just, it's just, this ain't it. And that's what I believe jacked them up, because people didn't even give the movie a shot, really. They didn't even give it a chance.
I don't think anything in that movie wasn't something that kids at least 10 could watch.
What? Why?
No, they didn't advertise this to, I don't think they really advertise it in places where kids would actually see it, or they would, you know, like to attract any family to go see.
So we saying it had a marketing issue.
Yeah, because it.
That should be the title of this podcast.
It had like a Conan, like they tried to make it feel like it was going to be a rough and rugged Conan type of looking thing where you couldn't take your kids to see it.
Well, it depends on which preview you saw.
Yeah, it's true, and so. A lot of times I'm not going to risk it. Why am I going to take my kid? No, when I take my kids to see a movie, they got to sit there and I want them to be entertained. I'm not going to take a chance, or I don't want them to see something that I have to explain later in a conversation. So I'm not going to take the chance and do that.
And it's Disney. Yeah. So then if you were thinking it was going to be hardcore and action packed, you're like, oh, but it's Disney. I don't know. Oh, and there's an animated dog in here. I'm out. You know, just kind of, they kind of look like Jar Jar with sticks. I'm out. You know, so it's like all the bad stuff that you've seen before was in the preview. And you're like, I'm not doing that again.
The preview where he was in the arena and he was fighting those things. And then he did the little sigh when he was fighting. It was a little too funny. And it was like, okay, this. It gave me that Conan thing that you were talking about, Daryl. Like, I don't know. I just saw Conan and that wasn't good. And
it was not good.
Eric, you saw that too?
Yeah.
I don't think Conan was that bad.
The remake, it was not good.
I don't think the remake was that bad.
It was a Saturday movie, not a
release. It was Prince of Persia territory for me as well, that movie was.
Yeah.
No, a little better.
Not much, dude. Anyway, I'm tired of Mark Strong being typecast there with the evil guy every movie. Oh.
I think he serviced the role well.
He did, but I was just like, he's evil guy every time. I want to see him doing well. I guess if he did something not evil, then I'd be freaked out. But whatever.
But I mean, he had to either cast him or what's his
Andy
name?
Garcia,
Agent from Matrix.
Mr.
Rivendell.
Yeah.
Hugo Weaving.
I mean, the de facto, you know, mysterious like evil.
Mr. Carter.
What do y'all think of Taylor Kitsch as an action hero? Did y'all like him? Did y'all believe him?
I found him a more believable kind of cowboy than what's his name from Cowboys and Aliens.
James Bond.
I swear I thought that.
Yeah.
Like, he was a badass.
He was.
Like when they were reading out all the stuff that he did
It wouldn't sit still for it. That was a fun part. I love that.
I got a couple things to say about Taylor. I mean, first of all, like I've been saying to a couple of friends, like I'm totally biased because, like, my three favorite dramas of the last decade, the last 10 years, are BSG, the remake, obviously, Lost, and Friday Night Lights, where Taylor Kitsch is pretty much the most popular person on that cast of Friday Night Lights. Oh. So I already go in with that baggage. baggage in a good way, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't mean in a bad way. Yeah, no. So I'm totally there for him, and it's awesome to see him do that. And it's also weird that, like, him and our princess, Lynn Collins, mm-hmm. like, both of them, I guess their main featuring roles in any motion picture was both in the same movie, the pair of them, which is weird, back in Wolverine, X-Men Origins.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, was he Gambit?
He was Gambit.
Yeah, he was Gambit.
You know what? I totally blanked that out. I didn't even realize.
Yeah, and she was Wolverine's,
Her, I remember.
Nice.
Good eye.
I did not put that together.
Yeah.
Well, also, I mean, the only place I actually recognized her, well, I didn't recognize her from Wolverine off the bat, but I did recognize her from her stint in True Blood. I'm not a True Blood person either. I'm not into that show, but oh yeah, she was that skanky vamp. Or wait, was she a vampire or no?
I thought she was a shapeshifter or something, or a witch. What was she?
I don't know, and I watched that show, and I don't know.
I can't remember what she was.
I'm not big into True Blood, so I can't even think of the character.
Oh, she was a waitress. She was the second victim of the serial killer in the first season, I think. Yeah, okay. Well, that's why I don't remember her.
Oh, okay.
But not important. But I'm just glad that he got this role, and I don't know about his next one in Battleship. That looks dubious. But
I don't know. It has Liam Neeson and Rihanna.
Oh, in that case.
Something tells me that there's not going to be a fluid unveiling of character development in Battleship. Maybe. Something tells me that because this is a big budget film, people are still going to go see it. You know, I'm just putting it out there, people.
I might go see it if I see a big black guy scared. I might go see it.
Oh, jeez. Here we go.
But so the building going to blow up. I got to go.
Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Does he die early? Because I have a...
I think so, because I think they spoiled it in the trailer.
What's wrong with y'all? Y'all spoiling Battleship for me. I am anxiously looking forward.
You just watch the trailer. It doesn't... It's not sure.
I want to see it, but I have I just had an inkling of...
Carl, you have to see it because it might be one of our turds for the year.
Yeah.
I'm going to see it, man. And I'm going to see it with an open mind.
Oh.
IMAX
3D. Highly doubt that.
Skyline.
Oh, don't do that, Skyline. If I see some red, blue aliens humping at the end of the movie, I'm really going to be pissed.
Oh, that'd be like... I'm telling you, you got to hear the guys that did Skyline talk about the reasons why they did the things they did.
I don't want to hear it. Good reasons. I don't want to hear it.
There's no excuse for
what they did. No, it's none.
Well, you know why they made them red? Because the studio was like, you can't keep them the same color. So they were like, well, what you going to do? Okay, we'll make his eyes red. Since everything is blue, we'll make his eyes red. That was basically the idea.
I know. We could tell that from the movie.
It really did.
And it was so obvious, and it irritated me.
Looked like they just slapped stuff together. Yeah, we're going to try this. Go with that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, Eric, did you see Skyline?
Yeah, we've already had this discussion. Oh, okay. It doesn't bother me. Skyline doesn't bother me.
Oh, God.
Skyline doesn't bother me.
Do you hear somebody on Sci-Fi Partline saying Skyline does not bother them?
No, because I walked into Skyline. I walked into Skyline having, like, Syfy Channel movie of the week standard. I went in with that.
No, movies are better than that.
Well, you like them. I don't like them. I don't like them. And so I had, like, the bar was so low. I saw in Skyline was so much better than what my expectations were.
Wow. What were you expecting?
I was expecting something I would want to walk out of. That's what I was expecting.
Wow. And that's what they delivered, right?
I wanted to walk out, but I had to see it to the end because I wanted to know, could this get any worse, or can it get better?
Uh, uh, It totally worked for me. Like, I looked at it as, I don't even know what the budget was on that movie, but I just assumed it was extremely low. And I thought for, you know, for such a small budget, that works. I think that works. It's no Birdemic.
But it had no script. That was the problem. It wasn't.
Oh, God, not Birdemic.
It wasn't the sci-fi. It wasn't the budget with the sci-fi. The special.
I don't think it was. I'm not saying it was a classic. I'm not saying it gets to be on any good list. But no, I expected like the worst, and it was a lot better than the worst for me. And I was actually.
What movie is worse than?
Well, I don't know. Like some of the bad ones we already mentioned, like Prince of Persia and Conan were worse for me.
Avatar.
Wait, no.
Yeah, Avatar,
the Last Airbender.
Yeah, that was worse too, for sure.
Or the Joey from Staten Island.
What?
That's that guy, the guy that played Avatar. If you listen to him talk, he sounds like a guy from Staten Island. He has the New York accent, the whole thing.
Yeah, but his accent fluctuated throughout that whole movie.
Everybody's did.
Yeah, were from Paris.
Yeah, but yeah, that is another movie that's worse, though.
That's probably did not have in Skyler.
Certainly. But again, low expectations, and I was like, that was totally watchable.
I don't know how low expectations.
I was offended randomly in that film. just stuff made.
I never took anything seriously in it. You know, it was.
Were you high or drunk?
Must have been on some sort of chemical.
Yeah,
because
have anything in my medicine cabinet that could have made that better.
Honestly, I was looking at Train Wreck, and it just came out like, that was good. Like to me, it's like
in the same sentence, dude.
I thought it was fine. And for like a super cheap movie, are the effects like summer blockbuster standard? No, they're not. But for being shoestring budget, they were good. And so I was like, it's good. It's all right.
The effects they watched on TV. They were watching the action on TV or via their telescope. That was right. We saw the action they were watching on TV.
I mean, you just reminded me of the movie that's offended me the most in recent years.
Now I'm anxious. I'm dying.
The movies that I absolutely just start yelling and cussing, like when someone starts watching it near me, is anything that's Paranormal Activity, any of that stuff.
Uh-oh.
That to me is just.
Nene, close your ears.
I kind of liked it.
Oh,
I kind of like Paranormal Activity. I didn't have an issue.
I understand. If certain people, if that's your thing, then there's nothing you can say about that. Like if that's somebody's thing, that's their thing. That's fine. But if it's not your thing, it makes no sense of like, why you would sit for that. If those like cheap like thrills don't work for you, and if it's
okay, well, let's move on from that. So, what were we? John Carter.
I'm gonna own it on Blu-ray when it comes out.
I totally will.
Yeah,
of course.
Okay.
Definitely.
I already told you. I mean, I started reading the novel after I
How
saw.
How is it?
Well, I'm still early on, and it's good. I mean, it's exactly what I expect. I mean, it reads. Like the other classic sci-fi that we mentioned earlier, it reads like that. Because it's serialized, because the original book was, I think it was released like by chapter originally.
Oh, because it was released in a magazine. Yeah.
Right. So you kind of get that Flash Gordon or whatever type serialistic nature to it. Mm-hmm. Like each chapter kind of, has like a little cliffhanger sort of. From as far as I've gotten into it, the movie is extremely faithful for the most part. Surprisingly or not, it at least in the beginning parts, it's almost like word for word, and I mean the things are described as is. I saw some people criticizing, saying, "Oh, these are just like Avatar aliens," but it's exactly how the aliens are described in the original text. So maybe
Avatar did some borrowing, and maybe it's Avatar that's derivative, not this thing. I was kind of offended.
And I like how
John Carter derivative.
Even though it is 100 years old, I mean, he still knew things that scientists knew 100 years ago. So there is some, like, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but one of my favorite documentaries from like 5-7 years ago. Did you guys ever see that Alien Planet Fode, like nature documentary?
Yeah,
they
I saw
space
that.
Probes to like you know, a planet like, you know,
wherever. In another system someplace.
Yeah, but they were class doing M planet, and the probes go down. And they do it like a nature documentary, as if it's supposed to be real, but obviously it's not real. But they try to, you know, put science in it to make, like, this ecosystem seem real.
Yep.
On another planet. Well, the John Carter universe, or the way Mars is described in the original book and in the way you see the movie, it's, it has that kind of logic to it, too, because... Because John Carter, he notices how the different species, whether it's the green guys or like the things they ride, he notices like the how the creatures, like you know, the sexpedal and the you know, the six limbed ones, the eight limbed ones, and he notices like that commonality with the different like alien species on the planet, and you know, there's 18th 19th century science behind all this stuff.
I'm with you. I mean they made it reasonable too. You know, that whole idea of, you know, sailing on light and the, you know, the lens, yeah, glass tech and all that. Even though it was, you know, a dated technology, you could still kind of imagine it working. It's not like they landed on Mars and it was steam powered. And so you're like, come on.
I know, I love
it. It
had
the steam look, though. The steam.
Because in a way, I mean, he was like talking about solar winds before that was ever something anybody ever heard before. Yeah.
And the other thing is, when you were talking about the alien, you know, biology in the, and remember I was saying it was like the old books, the aliens that you see on the cover of old sci-fi books.
Yeah, yeah.
There was one book that I grew up with. I mean, I was just a kid. It was called Our Universe, right? It was a big,
yeah, I know that book.
Big,
I know
big
that
color.
Book.
Do you remember that there were these aliens just,
yes,
like in the documentary?
I remember there was the one that was ice skating. It had like biological like ice blades,
yes,
on its feet, and it was constantly skating on the surface of the planet to stay on,
yep,
the sunny side.
There was the hot air balloon eye things that were,
yes,
in the gas giants. The realism and the physics that they put behind, you know, the plausibility of the aliens in this movie felt just like in the books, felt just like in Our Universe. It had that same realistic, you know, feel to it, and it was, yeah,
yeah,
it was,
Yeah, and they try to explain it. I mean, oh yeah, so yeah, superhuman power because of the gravity. But I mean, it's like H.G. Wells' First Men on the Moon. And in that book, when they first get to the moon and they meet the alien inhabitants there, they have the same thing. Like the aliens are not used to, you know, they're used to different weaker gravity. So the humans are able just to like kill them, you know, the one blow.
Yeah, that was rough.
That.
But they were not expecting the left hook on Mars. They really were not ready for that.
But I don't know. It was. I don't even know where we started with this. I don't know what jag I'm on right now.
Yeah, John Carter. Anyway.
Oh yeah, the book.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. So it's all there, and it's good stuff. And I guess I've never read Tarzan, but like I said, it just has that classic feel where, you know, oh, now what are we getting into in this chapter? And, you know, this is the problem of the chapter. And, you know, and then that's solved, and now we're into chapter two, and you can kind of see. In the movie, if you kind of think about it, you can almost visualize like where the chapter breaks are in the book if you think about the movie. But it's good if you're into that, reading that kind of thing, it's good stuff. And the other thing I like is it, you know, it's like one book of nine. I like that. Wow, there's like eight more books I can get into and see this universe get further fleshed out, and who knows what's to come, you know?
Oh, how many movies do you think we're going to get? Because I think I saw three on Wikipedia.
Well, I know that was their plan, was to make three, but see, that's the other thing, though. I'm worried, though, because obviously this is one of those movies that's on the bubble. Yeah. You know, it's like Superman Returns and how it never got, you know, the sequel that was meant for that.
I don't see why people hated that so much.
But look at Clash of the Titans, how that got us. So, I mean, it gives me hope, but
well, Liam Neeson.
Because I enjoyed this, I know they won't make a sequel to it. But
yeah, because, you know, it's the same thing. Like I really want my Tron Legacy sequel. It's still kind of in its same limbo as well for the same reasons.
I thought that movie made money.
No, it's coming.
It did. Sadly, it did. They probably won't make another light.
Oh, yeah, you're one of the Tron haters. No,
there will be a sequel.
There will be another light show.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Pretty.
Well, people got fired over this movie.
What?
At Disney already.
Why?
Which one? We talking about Tron or Carter? Which one?
We talking about Carter.
Oh, okay.
Because of how much money it lost, and it adds to other movies they've tried to do that lost some money, too. So,
well, you know, but they don't need to. They don't.
But honestly, I don't think it's the movie's fault. They need to get on the marketing.
They need to.
Yeah, you guys talked about the marketing, and I really think that is where it all goes down.
But I think that's why they lost their job. I think that's where the firing comes from, is the way that the movies are marketed.
Yeah, because I mean, I feel like that's what sunk Scott Pilgrim last year.
Because I think they tried too hard to appeal to too many people, and they just like put an alien in, and it put some those light ships in it or whatever, and they just should have did something really different.
See, I don't know. I'm always been partial to like the secret strategy when you go to the marketing, but I know it's a gamble. But like the easiest example is like District 9.
Yep.
I thought that was pretty, of course, District 9 delivers. So then you get all the word of mouth. So it works in that case.
Matrix One was good. Yep.
Mm. I don't even remember the ads for that movie.
Me either.
It was real, real quiet. Yeah,
they were like,
yeah, but you hear a title like The Matrix, you want to see it.
I didn't. I saw Keanu, and I was having Johnny Mnemonic flashbacks. I was forcibly dragged to see The Matrix because I did not want to do that again.
I remember when it had the commercial. But it had the commercial where, do you want to know what The Matrix is? And that's it. Like, there was that first commercial they did in the movies where, do you want to know what The Matrix is? Like,
Keanu went, and I said, nope. That's all I need.
I think it's smart, like with a movie like The Matrix. I think it's smart to do that route rather than just do that whole, like, let's throw it all in and throw explosions and weapons. Because it's not really about that, even though it does have that.
I agree.
I don't know. They just should have done something different.
And then the movie that's intriguing me a lot right now because of its, like, covert viral marketing.
Battleship?
No. 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 No, Prometheus.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
They have some real interesting stuff going as far as the marketing side goes.
Oh, yeah. You know which one we're talking about, right? The Ted video. That was genius. Oh, that was really so genius.
Awesome. It's genius, but yet we don't even know how it's genius. Like, but we're already calling it genius, anyway. And we don't even. I'm saying it's genius. A piece of the puzzle. We don't even know the picture.
But we've seen the trailer. We saw the trailer, and for that trailer to be associated with the previous trailer, the Ted thing to be associated with the trailer, is like, how does that fit together?
No, I agree totally. But it's funny to me because we're marveling at just a single piece of the puzzle, and we're calling it genius, and it's so funny because we don't even.
Okay, maybe it's an expression at this point. Okay.
No, well, but I mean, I agree though. But it is brilliant, even though it'll pay off even more down the road when we figure out exactly how this all fits together.
From the marketing standpoint, for them to have, you know, the kind of respect, because, you know, we all love Ted. Ted Talks are awesome.
Yeah.
So for them to cross the genre like that, to show respect to Ted, as well as, you know, the budding sci-fi fans that we are, that was a good move.
And the guy was just arrogant, you know? He was just...
Well, he's, you know, he's the... He's the Haddon. You remember, like, from Contact? He's the Haddon of the time. Uh-huh. That's what we're doing.
Well, he's pissed because he was in the remake of Time Machine, and that really bombed back in, like, 2002, whatever year. And so now he's back for his revenge.
You know, there were some elements of the Time Machine in John Carter, you know.
I liked the remake of Time Machine also, and I was... I don't know. That movie's been buried, but anyway... I have a little candle for the remake in my closet over there. But but
suddenly Skyline is making sense. All of
but Prometheus, I mean I love marketing stuff like that where like the Ted thing, obviously, I mean, we're all keyed in, we're excited by that, but at the same time, it's not necessary to see that, it's not necessary to know that for the general public to go see the movie. I think it's kind of to excite us, so we all blog about it and try to get the word going.
So, are you trying to say that it's to excite us in the same way, like, Snakes in the Plane was viral?
I mean, it's targeting the people who have, like...
So did Snakes on a Plane,
Did it excite the Spidey sense?
No,
well, a lot of people really talked about that thing, and a lot of people were excited about, Sam Lil High Five
for spreading all that at the time.
That's true, but I'm just saying, our circle was extremely excited about Snakes on the Plane, and then you saw the thing, and it was just like, wow.
Yeah, but I mean, if you went in expecting schlock, then you got served. your meal.
You know, you should have just left. You got served. That would have been cool, man. I was like, that was mighty down up. That was dope right there. I like
God,
that.
You guys are funny. Okay. Well, we did a lot of movie talk. I didn't expect all of that. I want to change pace a little bit, and I want to talk about the latest episode of The Walking Dead.
What is going on? They're killing us on The Walking Dead.
The reason why Daryl is here because he reads the comic books.
Oh, yeah.
And Daryl said something interesting on Twitter. Explain Shane and well, how do we want to go? Do we want to talk about him now, or do we want to lead up to how?
Because comic book Shane is not. There's not much to comic book Shane. Shane was not long for this world in the book.
Okay.
So if you want to, Shane's whole thing was Robert Kirkman thought that this book was not going to make it past six issues. So he kind of dealt with the Shane issue. You had the. You know, the thing with Lori having that affair because she thought and he thought that Rick was dead. And
she was fragile.
Yeah, she was fragile. Rick comes back. They kept that part where Rick comes back and kind of becomes the leader of the group. And that kind of rubs Shane the wrong way. Carl is still running around. He does get a gun. They do give him a gun. They teach him how to shoot. But I think even in the sixth issue, there's the confrontation between Shane and Rick. And it's subtle how Shane turns the gun on Rick and Carl just happens to be watching. And he kills Shane. A live Shane, not a zombie Shane. So he was forced to kill his uncle, pretty much.
Something tells me they couldn't get away with that on AMC.
No, I don't think they could have.
Well, this episode of Walking Dead for me was a real shocker because I didn't expect Shane to die. Because we've been just on this farm. Nothing's been going on. Nobody's dying. You know, they seem like they're keeping and holding the characters for some unknown reason. Seems like all of these characters are safe. Then we got Dale, you know. Kicks the bucket.
Yay.
And Dale kicks the bucket, and then we just thought, okay, then that's all the death we're going to get for a while.
They literally had just finished burying Dale.
Literally. Yeah. And then, so the next episode, we get the Shane-Rick showdown, Shank under the moon thing. Mm-hmm. And it was just so exciting. I didn't expect anything like that the very next week.
Yep.
And so it was like Walking Dead overload. Now, I think Charles in our feed said that this framing of this particular episode was similar to the comic book. Daryl, is that true or something? Like the visuals?
Yeah, there. Like you had Rick and Shane out there in an open field, and it kind of has the trees behind them. And
was it under the moonlight like that? Because I thought this episode, like the direction was really weird. It was different from all of the other ones because they had the dramatic under the moon thing. And
I would say that, and I didn't realize until after I heard the new showrunner that took over after Darabont left. I noticed that the last two or three episodes have been the closest to the feel of the book, meaning that storylines are dealt with a lot quicker. And it's more dramatic. The character interaction, like with Laurie and the confrontation between Laurie and
Andrea,
that stuff that Darabont never wanted to happen. He wanted to drag that Laurie with the baby, and he wanted to drag that till next season, like because that's how some people do TV.
I didn't want that because that was killing me. But
yeah, it was killing me too. So it's just exciting that they kind of revved it up. You got that confrontation between Rick and Shane. They had that talk, and then you had, Andrea and Lori. They had that talk that was coming, and you had Herschel dealing with Rick and working that out. You know, instead of sitting there and still blaming Rick and the group for what happened to his family. So it all this stuff has been moving in a pace that the book has been emotionally a roller coaster. That's how the book has been written, and I think that's what attracted a lot of people to the book.
Yep.
And that's what's been missing, I think, from the show, from the first season to half of the second season.
Well, that's good to know. Carl, what did you think?
Wow, it was awesome. You know, we were dogging them about being on the barn, but they're still in the barn. I'm exhausted. Stuff is just happening. And, of course, mm-hmm. let's not forget, we got the Dale issue, so they just buried Dale. Then we lost Shane. And literally, before we have a chance to go, oh, Shane gets back up. Shane gets back up. So beside the fact that the kid took him out and all that stuff, now we've got, you know, what's going on, airborne zombie virus now.
Is so exciting because I think one of y'all was like going on, well, there are no bites. And they kept going on with the no bites and stuff like that on the, because how they look zombified, but they have no bites. And they kept going on about that. And now we see that perhaps that everybody who is living is actually already a zombie. And when they die, they're going to come back. They're literally the walking dead.
Like the movie rules. That's how the movies, you know, is kind of following the rules of the movies, of the zombie movies.
What type of rules?
You die, you become a zombie.
You have to get bit first before you come.
Not all the time. Some of is it George Romero's version? Well, it's one of the versions.
Because you know, he had the good ones up, and you know, what was it, the big one with Ving Rhames and the crew. Mm-hmm. That was the last, and then there were all these campy ones that came after that with like John Leguizamo in it. I was like, oh, that's not.
I forgot. Kirkman said that there was a particular writer with zombies that he really respected, and he kind of wanted to follow that rule. And I can't remember which one it was, but that is dealt with, like when something dies. Pretty much we're all it's kind of like we're all infected, but as long as we're alive, we're good. But when you die,
I didn't really get that was where the story was going before.
I didn't know about that rule. I'm a fan of zombie movies. I don't remember that one. Resident Evil, none of them.
But I like it. It's interesting because I didn't like know where they were going with some of the issues, and then we literally have a case where we see with our own eyes somebody got shot in the head, and then they get back up. And another thing I was noticed about the direction is that we had these like zombie, flashes or something.
Yeah, it's
very different from anything that we've ever seen in this show. Yeah. And I was like, well, is somebody doing something, directing something different? What is that? Because it looked like comic steals or something. I don't know. It just was really bizarre because we've never seen anything. So I was excited about that. It felt like a different show. It felt like first season all over again, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, and it's not in the book. That flashing thing, you know.
You get shot or your neck broke or something like that, do they get back up? Is that in the comic book?
I mean, well, not being bitten.
Well, your brain is intact. Like if you die, but you're not hit with a brain shot, you know, a headshot, or you're headless or something like that, I think you have to have your brain has to be intact before you become a zombie. I think that's one of the things with the book, and it's probably what he's going to hold on to for this show, is that you have to have your brain. Or I think your heart too. Or do you not need the heart? I'm trying to think if anybody got hit in the heart and survived and kept walking. I'm not sure.
I don't know, but so that theme is in the comic books though.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That is so interesting, and I'm glad no one spoiled that for me. Just, you know, reading random stuff. I didn't know that that was going to happen, and I just thought it was really exciting.
I mean, dangerous is that to, if you kill somebody, like if you have a conflict with another group, which we know they've had, not only do you have to worry about, you know, taking them out, but you have to worry about them becoming a zombie also.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's so interesting. And then, you know, Carl, you know, last time we spoke about Walking Dead, I was just dying for zombies to come and overtake the farm.
You
and
got
finally,
it. Yes.
They come in this dramatic horde.
That pan was nice, wasn't it? The camera goes up, because I don't know if it was the contrast on my screen or they were just being that dramatic, but I couldn't see them at first. I was like, where's this camera going?
It's pretty dark.
And then all of a sudden, you just start to see the staggering coming off the top of your screen. It's like, oh, it's on now.
It's about to be on.
Yeah, that's why they can't be on the farm anymore. It's a perfect reason.
Thank God. I'm sick of that farm. I'm tired of it, and this is the Walking Dead that I've wanted, and I think they should overwhelm us each week, because that's how the first season was to me, and I'm ready.
And T-Dog almost had a part.
Yeah, he had like three lines this time, so he's like triple what he normally does.
I got to sleep on the couch.
No, he's sleeping on the floor.
Oh yeah, he wanted to sleep on the couch.
Yeah, he's going to die soon. I just feel it. He has to. But
I think Carol's going to get it, too.
Are you spoiling us, or you just think?
No, I'm just assuming. I think Carol's not going to make it.
Because she's not really doing anything anymore, is she?
They took away her... they took away her, you know, the abusive husband. They took away her child. I mean, there's not much left to do.
Well, she's already got the G.I. Jane haircut. Maybe she'll be badass.
I keep thinking she's going to sell Activia.
Oh...
I had a song.
That's funny. Very funny.
I don't think she's going to make it, though.
I don't either.
I don't think Hirsch is going to make it either.
Herschel, he's too old. He can't make it. He's going to sacrifice himself, I believe. He's going to do that.
I'm going down with my farm.
Was there a random new guy tending to the farm this episode as well?
What I thought, that wasn't that. Didn't Herschel have a son, too?
Yeah, but he's like, what does he do?
Walk around?
Yeah, we haven't seen him in a while, and he was just so... I was like, who the hell is this guy walking around? He's going to die.
You got to have a couple of people die, so you kill him off. You probably kill off the sister.
Yeah, because she already want to die.
Maggie, too hot. She got to survive, plus she's with Glenn. So they got to have that. So I think she's going to make it, but be damaged because she lost her, you know, she lost the rest of her family.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what can you do? But, so is this one more episode for us, or do we have more?
No, it's one more. That's it. This is it. The finale.
Why do they treat us this way?
And then they go to they hired somebody as the governor, and I won't even say anything about that. But
I've heard something about that governor, but I forgot what it was, so it'll be new to me.
Don't even worry about it. You want to watch what they do on TV with the governor. It's going to be crazy.
Okay.
You thought, you thought Shane was nuts. No.
Oh, aren't there supposed to be some, like, new badass chick introduced? And where is she? Because I've been waiting on her for a while.
I haven't heard if she's hot. Well, you know you got to get rid of T-Dog, and then you can't have that many black people on one show.
Oh, God.
Come on now. You know it's true. So they get rid of him. You know that another black person going to come on. So.
Oh, nice. Wow.
That's how it go.
Make room for the hottie.
All right.
Hey.
Because T-Dog ain't really doing anything. If we have somebody, you know, double barrel, you know, two guns, John Woo style. Yeah. Oh, a sword. Okay.
Yeah, she uses a sword.
Well, that's better.
This is getting better. Move on, T-Dog. Sorry, bud.
Yeah, sorry.
You gotta go.
T-Dog. We'll see you at the conventions.
Now, do you guys think that Shane wanted Rick to kill him? Part of him wanted that?
No.
Shane.
No. No. Because he was claiming his property. That's what was going on. I'm the man. She's carrying my baby. Because she opened up her mouth and said all that crazy. Shane had finally taken on a position. All right, look, I'm going to be a team player. You know, I may have gotten a little excited in the past. We just lost Dale. I'm going to be cool. And then she leans in and goes, you know, all that time that we were together, I really started thinking about that again. And Shane's like, really? And you know, I don't even know if this is your... Oh, that was it. Shane was like, oh, I'm back now.
So in other words, I'm not with him. You right now, but you might be able to call me later.
It woke him up. It woke up Bad Jane, and he was ready to start some stuff again. And so, no, he was not, you know, heroically sacrificing himself. He was trying to get him out of the shot. He was trying to get Rick out of there, and it just did not go as he planned.
But I think Shane decided to kill Rick, and when he came back for him. The thing that made me think that is, when they had that conversation, this whole thing was, the reason why I think I'm better for Lori and Carl than you are is because I will do whatever is necessary.
Wait, came back for who? When you said came back for him?
When they were fighting.
Shane was on the bus.
And Shane was on the bus, and Rick came back for Shane.
Oh, yeah.
I think Shane thought of that as being as the
weak
final decision of, I am a major threat to your family. That's what I am. Remember when he said you should do anything that's necessary to protect your family, and I am the threat. You should never have come back from me. Because I'm telling you I'm a threat.
But the thing is if you leave a guy out there like that and something happens and that guy gets a chance to come back, Shane is going to come back with a bunch of guns and a bunch of guns blazing. It'll be a problem. But if he rescued Shane at that moment, he could talk to Shane. He can talk down Shane. Shane would feel humble like he was. And then I'm just saying he was calm for a few.
He was calm for
a couple of episodes, and there then Lori got to yapping her mouth about
it. Exactly.
There was a look with Shane with Rick.
He was looking at the zombie walking through the field.
Remember when he came back to the house and they had that argument again about the guy, and Shane said to him, "You are too weak."
Well, he started getting pumped back up. Yeah, yeah.
You do not do what is necessary to protect Carl. You got a weak. He said you have a broken wife,
woman,
and a weak son.
Was that before or after Dale though? Was that before or after Dale?
After
died?
Dale.
After Dale.
That was after. Okay. Well.
So yeah. I think at that point he decided to kill Rick. Everything from the bus led up to it, and then once Lori, you know, went and inserted crazy into him again, then
remember what he said to Andrea. He said even after he came back from saving him, he still said to her, Rick is not right, is not the right person to lead this group.
Yeah,
well, that's because Shane is crazy, but now he's dead.
But he had a code though. Shane's code was, I will do anything that is necessary to protect that one. I don't know why, because I don't know why he feels that way about that woman, but I will do anything necessary to protect that woman, that baby, and Carl. Yeah. Anything. Yeah. If I got to kill, I don't care if I have to kill the whole group.
And don't forget, because, you know, his baby's on the way, so that was the other thing. So
that means you have no time. Every time Rick makes a decision to leave them or to want to save somebody, or you're telling me, or you let me live, I'm telling you I'm coming at you. I'm telling you I'm coming for your
woman. But Shane is flawed and Shane is crazy, which means Shane had to die. Because he's just not ridiculous. He's not a rational person. Nobody is. I mean, I understand what he's saying, but he's just going at it. He's just too hard. It's too much. You need to calm the F down, number one, and let's think about these things. So if he would do anything for this family, he's scaring Lori, number one. So if he killed everybody on the farm,
hold on, Lori, hang on.
If he killed everybody on that farm, save Lori and Carl, then Lori's like, oh my God, I'm with a murderer. You just killed everybody, but I'm scared of you. I'm afraid of you
now. But hold me.
Exactly.
I don't know if she would, she would have been weak and pregnant, and she wouldn't have been able to fight him off. Plus, she's like olive oil, so skinny. She's not really, I don't know.
Lori has been, the whole thing with that is Lori wants to be protected. Like, that's the thing she gave off. The whole thing with whispering into Rick's ear, where you know you have to kill him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has to die. She didn't say you had to work it out. She said you have to kill him.
Yep.
He is going to take me and this child away from you. She put the gun in his hand.
So you think she purposefully... go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying. And knowing that she had that wisdom, mm-hmm. told that to Rick, for her then to go later and then talk to Shane, you know, I'm just how I feel. That makes her character quite dubious.
Yes.
quite dubious.
Exactly.
Like, so you think she did that on purpose to get them to, like, once for all, somebody, you know, prevail?
I don't think so. I think she said, Rick, okay, Rick's not going to kill him. I'm going to have to change up my story. I'm going to have to work something else out.
Yeah, yeah.
That... Because she basically was telling Rick, all right, Shane got to go. Like, he has to die. You have to take Shane out. And she thought that that's what was going to wind up happening. And then when he brought him back, I'm pretty sure Rick said, we kind of worked out an understanding. We're going to work it out. We're going to be cool. And that's when she was like, all right, I gotta switch up because I got to deal with this guy every day. Now I got to go talk to him and kind of, you know, smooth things over because I don't want him hating me.
Quote, smooth things over.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And she set him off.
Yep. Great going there.
Yeah. Yeah, Laurie.
Well, nice. I mean, now we're done with it. But mm-hmm. then, I mean, we lost a great warrior, though, because he's pretty vicious. And then I don't think Dale was vicious, but he's a great loss as far as a warrior, but it's hard to keep him in check because he's, you know, kind of bullheaded. But I don't know.
Dale was dangerous for the group.
Because
when you have to make decisions, like, to survive, we have to make these decisions quickly. You cannot have a Dale talking about, we need a court, we need to discuss, we need to do this.
Well, I mean, if you listen to our last episode, I know where he was going,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, like, once you murder somebody not out of self-defense, then you're just a different person. But I understand also that they're in a survival mode and they're in a really bad situation. But, you know,
there's got to be a balance.
There has to be a balance. But the thing for me is, you know, if you're going to do that, they shouldn't have saved the guy in the first place. They should have let the zombies eat him and walked away. But once you save that guy, you took on a life and you're responsible for him. You can't just go cap him after the fact.
Yep. Yes, you can.
Yep.
No. I mean, you can, but then it's like...
You're not letting you endanger you. And plus, you didn't talk. Plus, you told me that the group that you were running with were taking women and raping them. And then leaving them. And you were attacking and stealing from other groups and probably killing other groups. Mm-hmm. To take their stuff. I'm sorry, but that's out. Like, you done.
Personally, that's fine. But you know what? You shouldn't have gotten to that point. If you know that you need to protect your group at all time, they should not have brought him in. They should have, you know, been nice to him and shot him in the head right there.
Well, that's Rick's fault. And I don't think that's... And the thing that I can't wait to see for next season is... Rick has to change up the way that he does things because it's partly his fault that it got to the point that it did. And he's kind of right.
What got to what point?
The whole thing with the having the guy getting killed and Shane going crazy.
No.
There were seeds that you should have dealt with quickly instead of, like, sometimes you can't have a conversation. Sometimes you just can't. Part of that, what Shane was saying... I agree with part of that.
I mean, yeah, it's right. It's true. But for some reason, they just elected to have Rick as their leader for whatever reason. And then...
He's good, though. Rick is... He is good,
but like you said, there are some problems.
Well, the issue is, you know, he's doing his job. And he's always been, you know, a sheriff, a police mm-hmm. officer, which means he's adhering to a higher code of standards and law, which tends to be a little bit above where people are right then. And, you know, you pick a guy like that as your leader because in the heat of the battle, you can make bad decisions. Or, in the pressures of a moment, you can lose your humanity. So you put somebody like that in a position of leadership because you trust him and you expect that he's going to be able to have the vision to sort of help you through the dark times. That was his job. And Dale was, you know, Dale was the, quote, minister out of all these guys. But I mean, everybody had their role. Shane was the regulator. You know, there was a role for everybody in the dynamic structure that they had created from the team. But with the loss of each of these people, with the loss of Dale and the loss of Shane, they were the moral and anger extremes of the group,
sure.
Which means that everybody else in the group is going to have to change. They're going to have to settle into positions left by those guys leaving, and that should make an interesting, you know, next season.
Well, you got Daryl. I mean, if Daryl makes it through,
yeah, he's a new Shane.
But well, maybe, because look, Daryl is getting a little sensitive. You know, he's I mean, not in a bad way. He was crazy like Shane, but even, you know, Daryl, he's kept looking up, going, you know what, Shane was a little bit getting crazy. You know, he you could see he was trying to take on a little thing. He went on the mission to save the girl. You know, he was internalizing a lot of that, which again, when you had Shane there, or when you had Dale saying, look, you know, there are more important things than what we see at this moment. We ought to pay attention to that. You know, you had him smelling the flowers and, you know, wandering out in the field for a higher purpose. But now that those guys are gone, we don't know which way he's going to go. It's not default that he's going to be.
But no, he was taking on some roles right before Shane was going crazy, and he was taking some of the – okay, so you know where I'm going, Daryl.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Okay. Yeah, so I think that he might take up – he might be a less ridiculous Shane.
Because well, he said to him, he said, because he's not in love with his woman. But he said to him, remember when he said, I'll lighten some of the load. You know, well, you and he I, let him.
Yeah, I thought he was saying that in reference to taking out Dale. No, seriously. I mean, because, you know, Rick was having a hard time in that moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and being the moral compass of the group, the only one left, you know, for him to, at that point, child sitting right there, whole gang around, Dale flailing around. For him, Sheriff, to drop them at that moment, that would have been not just emotionally hard on Rick, but morally hard on the group to see him do that. So, you know, when Daryl stepped up and was like, you know, all right, I'll do this. I thought that's what he meant when he was saying, you know, that I'll take the load for some of the things. I thought he was referencing that, but maybe
I just took it as I'll kill. If you want me to kill this dude, I'll kill him. If you don't want me to kill him, I won't. Like, let me. But you got to let me know what you want me to do.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to bother me like it is you.
Yeah.
Like, I have no problem, especially after he told him what they were doing. He was like, I'll take care of it if that's what you want me to do. But we're not going to have a long. I'm not going to sit there and nag you about it. Just tell me what you want me to do, and I'm going to do my job, and then we're not going to talk about it no more.
Yeah.
Typical man.
Not going to have that moment.
That's funny. Yeah. Oh, man. I can't believe this is a show about zombies.
That's what's
we've been talking about it for, what, 30, 40 minutes?
Hey, man, it's good stuff. Yeah. This is zombies at their finest. I told you, we were feeling for zombies after episode one. So this is good television, people.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. I swear, this is... I wish I felt the same way about this show than I did... the alien show that's about to come back?
Oh, Fallen Skies.
I wish I felt the same way about Fallen Skies. Yeah. I just don't.
I'm trying, you know, because it's so wily, and I'm pumped up about it every week, but, you know, I want them to get out of the school. So,
and I don't get this character, and I'm not getting this character interaction that I'm getting just from these couple episodes of Walking Dead. There's been more just real character interaction and drama than I've gotten from the entire season of Fallen Skies so far.
Well, you know, let's not diss one show to make another show look better.
I know, want that. I want the because I know that's
maybe
what they want to do.
We got the ending of Fallen Skies, and they had the like second order aliens or whatever, or the first order, and then the warrior aliens were on the Earth, enslaving the Earth, and then you got the aliens up in the sky, so we finally get to meet them and realize that they're there. So, you know, maybe it'll get a little bit more interesting, or maybe it'll get canceled.
I want Falling Skies to get better, and I remember the first season of Next Generation. I remember the first season of Babylon 5.
Deep Space Nine.
To me, they were virtually unwatchable in the beginning. And then, you know, I mean, Counter Farpoint, good God. You know, I mean, just... you know, they do get better. They do get better. Well, some do get better. And I'm hoping, holding out hope, because it's the only show we got now with aliens on it. So, come on. Bring it. Bring it.
Oh, gosh. It is the only alien.
Yep. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Life is bleak.
You can't even get some decent aliens to take over the planet. What's happening to modern sci-fi? That's...
Sad
I want a baby dinosaur to come out.
Oh, you know what? You hush it, Daryl.
Fight off rats.
Any last thoughts, gentlemen?
No, I'm just enjoying the zombies. Enjoying the zombies.
Daryl?
I'm just glad that it's getting better. I'm really, really glad that the show is getting better each episode. And that's the most important thing about it to me.
Is Eric still there? Did he go off and watch Deep Space Nine? Because that's what he's doing.
No, I'm totally here.
Sweet. All right, guys, that's our show. We love your feedback. Go to our website. Leave us a comment there at Sci-Fi Party Line. You can send us a tweet at Sci-Fi Party Line. We're on Facebook. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Zombie cows.
End of line.